Hi, good evening.
Hello.
Hi, good evening, Shim.
Good evening, Mr. Benedict.
How are you doing?
I'm good, sir. How are you doing?
Very well.
Okay. I think we are waiting for Mr. Pai.
Yes.
All right. I think Matthew's joined. Hello. Hi, Matthew.
Yeah, is it still good morning, Matthew, there?
Mm-hmm.
I think you're on mute.
Yeah.
Yeah, just.
Okay.
On the edge.
Okay, great. Good morning and good evening to both of you. Welcome to Sustainability Next Magazine's dialogue series, and happy that you both of you have made time to join this conversation. And a very quick introduction about Sustainability Next Magazine. I hope you had a chance to go through the website. So it is a 10-year-old e-magazine. You could call us the pioneers in sustainability media. And we are recently branching into sustainability education as well, but without changing the way we put out content. But I think education, we are giving more focus to education in our content in recent months, and hope to do that in the future. So wonderful to have Matthew with so much of his investment of his life into sustainability and climate education. So I see that you're doing some really wonderful things, and the thing that easily struck me is that how you're combining philosophy and sustainability and climate education. So that can be a nice breakup. Tell us, how are you doing this?
Yeah, thank you. And great that you're also doing work in this field. So it's really appreciated. It's one thing to do sustainability activities, but then it needs to be communicated to the world. So it's a vital job that you're doing, you know. But yeah, in terms of philosophy, I think that there's two things relevant there. First is that philosophy is often about systems of thinking. What underlying assumptions in our thinking? How does everything connect? That's what, when I teach, in my day job, when I'm teaching, that's what I'm doing. And making students think about what lies under the surface of things, and also how things come together. Questions of knowledge, leads to questions. Or questions of ethics, questions of politics. Because what is allowed to be, either by the self, because you block it, or by blocks it for whatever reasons, then you get into some very interesting questions. And that is really, I think, and environmentalism, that so much of what is happening is just known. And then when you start these further questions,
your line is a bit distorted, Matthew. Your line is a bit distorted.
Take it.
You're not very clear.
Could you hear me?
Yes, better.
That's better. Maybe I had the microphone. Should I say it again?
Yeah, please.
Yep. So, in philosophy, we question about what's true and what is real, and it's always trying to see what systems are in play, and it's also trying to see how things are connected. So, and that when you that's what I do every day in my philosophy classes, pushing students to think about what are their basic assumptions. And when you start to do that, you start to realize that the basic assumption which you carry in the world, which you never thought of, that's where the intersection is with environment and green things. So much of what is happening in the environment, just not on the radar for most people's awareness.
And so what you're saying is that in school education, if sustainability and climate action needs to be taught, it has to have a philosophical based on philosophy to some extent. Are you saying that?
I think that it has to be systems informed. I think the philosophy makes it easy to understand. Philosophy just makes the job of breaking it open easier. But I think you don't need philosophy to understand what's going on. But what you do need, for sure, is to be able to see the context of things. Critical thinking about the news, critical thinking about education, and those things. Looking at your assumptions and looking at the connections, those are the key things which are in play.
Okay, so coming to Shim, how did your group of schools get into the climate, setting up the climate academy by Matthew Pai? You're on mute.
I think you can hear me now.
Yeah.
Is it audible, right?
Yeah.
To take on from where Matthew has left, I would call it a chance meeting between Matthew Pai and one of my staff, teachers who was selected by the Swedish consular office here to travel to Sweden.
Okay.
To be part of the Nobel Prize Library, the teacher summit that they have every year. So my teacher Pooja Godfrey traveled to attend the summit. She was picked up from Bombay as one of the teachers representing our nation. And there she met up with Matthew Pai, and I think that's where they broke ice, and the philosophy of the Vibgyor group of schools in terms of not only talking to students about what they would learn from a normal school in terms of education, but also the much very cliched term of holistic learning, which would not just include what a student would learn while in school from his teachers or from some other skills that could be imparted. What we thought was important after this meeting was to understand how much of value one needs to attribute to life on Earth. And that's only possible when you start educating yourselves. I think both for young and old is very important. We've always heard about climate change, we heard about climate sustainability, but the climate crisis, as we call it, the dangers of what we can see is very much felt around. And that's where I said, Pooja, it's a great time for us to understand more about this, learn it ourselves, and then pass this learning all to our students and to our parent community. It makes no sense if we just keep it to ourselves. Yes, that's how this meeting took off.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Congratulations, I must say, to start with, that you
Thank
set
you.
Up such a wonderful initiative. To both Matthew Pai and Shiv Matthew, congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. So tell me the objective and what the goal, what you intend achieving in the next 3 to 5 years in the school, Mr. Pai.
Think it, to give as many students an understanding of the scope of the problem and the proximity of the problem. So, because environmentalism, it is so quickly globally by rules, it's reduced to small, low impact actions, you know, recycling, waste, and so on. And that just doesn't measure up to the size of what is in front of them. So the first thing is to really give students a view of all systems that are in play. So give them a good system of understanding. because they are, when they get to teenage, they are capable of understanding complexity, they're hungry to see connections in things. We don't give them a diet, we don't feed them that kind of knowledge. We tend to keep it like at a primary school level. So the first job, Mr. Matthew said, is to really pass on this knowledge to the students. And then I think the second job is to then mobilize those students to bring that knowledge even further into the India, into their communities, into the world and so on, so that they are civically engaged. And those are the first two pillars of the Climate Academy: civic engagement and then bringing it forward into wider society, through events, through podcasts, through videos, through articles and so on.
So, Mr. Pai, I think you you use the word system at least 5 times in the brief chat we've had so far. Just help us get that nuance of systems that we need if we have to make climate education much more effective and directional.
Yeah, I can give you one very quick example which I had most of my talks with, and I think it just makes it clear. And it's the difference of thinking about temperature as an event or temperature as a system. So if you think about temperature as an event, then it could be that Mumbai has one of a week of higher temperatures. That's an event. But when we talk about global warming, we're talking about the entire system being fixed at a higher temperature. So not just for Mumbai, but for the entire planet. And that is a bit like having a fever for a child. So if you have a temperature of 2 degrees, that's really significant. If you have a temperature of 4 degrees, that's almost instant death. So if you consider the planet as a system, and you think about temperature in a systemic way, then suddenly it becomes a different thing. It's not just an individual thing. And I think that's one of the main blocks people have with climate, in that because we're human, so it's natural, we think about things in the local, in the particular, in the moment, and we don't think about things as systems. So that's really the first step.
Sim, how do you intend taking Mr. Pai's wealth of knowledge and his understanding, and how do you intend incorporating into the curriculum at school, the group of your schools, and what level of students are you taking this to?
Great question. Let me tell you, even as we launched Climate Academy across our schools in Bombay, there's about 7 schools in Mumbai.
When was the year? Time?
This was last year in April, we launched the first set of academies in all our 7 schools in Mumbai in April 2023. I think what is important is, one thing is to launch an academy, but the more important part is to sustain it and make it run, make it work, make it so that everyone buys into it. We could start, but how to sustain that program is very, very critical. And the only way we could do it is by sharing this good news across all our schools pan India. And we did it in 2 different steps. First, we underwent a training where Mr. Matthew Pai himself trained. So we had a master training class for about 12 of our teachers and principals. So a total of about 20-21 people were trained in Mumbai, so that when the Climate Academy takes off, those modules that are conducted over the period of 6 to 8 months, somebody has trained them well to be able to continue and take up these modules in the classroom or in the school for the students. This year we went a step further. In the first week of April, along with Matthew, we traveled to our schools in Bangalore and to our schools in Pune, and all our schools in different parts of the West and the North. So 35 of our schools are now transformed also into climate academies, where we trained more than 80 teachers, including principals, vice principals, and senior staff. And we intend to make this as part of our learning program from grade 8 to grade 12. So by the end of an academic session, the students would be a certified Climate Academy ambassador, as I would call it. And these certifications will come down signed off by Matthew Pye and the team of jury, a jury who certifies the students who are part of this academic learning. And of course, there are three parts to it. We also have some civic issues that could be tackled by students, coming together, addressing an issue, speaking to parents and to the community about it, having installation of artwork and important cultural centers or festivals, thereby letting people know how important it is to tackle climate crisis for our own.
How open are you taking this, offering this to other schools, not just your school?
So that is the plan that we have in place. In fact, Matthew and I discussed that when he was here this month. And we are into a next level of discussion on how to take it to different schools of India and also to the countries that are next to India, as we used to earlier call them the SAARC nations. So
India itself is big enough.
That is true. I mean, it's a big number in India itself. But there are limitations in terms of resources, when I say manpower, because we need to be out there training, creating, doing master training, ensuring that this execution as per the systems, because Matthew keeps mentioning about a system part to climate care and to climate. And that's how we are planning the entire, over the next 1 year, how many schools can we take this out to, who are the ones who will benefit from it, and then move on to different schools in Asia.
Yeah, interesting. Mr. Pai, the biggest challenge in this education, climate education, is that the teachers are not gotten into the spirit of sustainability and understanding, and more so not because they don't want to, but particularly in India, teachers are overworked and they don't have the time or the patience or need to focus on that. So what is your mantra to get teachers engaged, not just trained as for the sake of getting trained, but make them into catalysts of transformation?
That's a puzzle I think about every day. You're right, and I think if we just think more widely, that's true for society in general. People in jobs, people in businesses, people in politics, it's the same thing there. It's hard to find space and the time to do this. And I have to say, I have such a lot of admiration for Mr. Chipper. He made the space in his school system for it. It does cost something. You have to be brave to put it out there. So I think there's always, in a way, a moment where you have to just be brave and step over a certain line. And the second thing is that once you see it, you can't unsee it. And when you see the size of the crisis, and you see, especially in the case of India, like the impacts that it will have, either you could talk about sea level rises in Mumbai, or you can talk about even in Bangalore, the draft that they have there, or the pressures on India are already serious. So once you see the background forces behind all of that, it's actually very interesting. I think one of the barriers to climate education in general is that people have only ever experienced it as quite a flat subject. You know, just about these individual events or these individual actions. It's always the same thing. It's always the same, and it's always the same moral message. And as soon as you open it up to the bigger picture, it opens up all kinds of possibilities. And if you are a teacher, so may I answer the question? If you are a teacher, and if you're a teacher of, I don't know, psychology, you're a teacher of biology or physics, you start to see things with depth from your subject. So then you get interested, then you get and the curiosity then gets triggered again. And then creativity and all those other things come into play again. So that's when you get that catalyst effect. So that's the same for teachers, it's the same for students. So, and you just have to, as I said, and what Mr. Shin Matthew did, you just have to make the space for it And then, in a sense, you have to trust the content to do its work. You have to trust that people do have a hunger for truth. People do have a sense of justice. They do have, they want to be involved. But most of the time, people just don't know how to be involved. And I think if you just, to finish with student engagement, I think that's one of the big problems for students, that when you're a teenager, you start to see how the world works more clearly. As an adolescent, you start to become cynical because you realize that you as an individual have such a little impact, there are these, and in a way, the Climate Academy takes them to that point where you recognize those things, the limits of certain things, but then it points you in a direction to go further so that you, with your skills, with your, you can actually become an agent of change in a really powerful way, and then you're suddenly in a new game. So new game, not just in terms of content, but new game in terms of how you can be involved, because you feel like you can make a difference. You're on mute, sorry. You're on mute.
Yeah, so I quite like your point about the importance of focusing on students. Because when they become adolescents, they become cynical and things like that. So it's important to catch them when they are young. So that's a very important point. And I also like the other point that if teachers who are specialized in a certain subject, if they focus on that, they'll show more interest rather than asking them to learn about everything and then try to focus on. I think these two are very critical points, yep. Which are very important. Yeah, so the other larger question is that how do we transition quickly from awareness to action? So today I think everybody is aware, even students, children, everybody is aware of the climate crisis. But there's a huge gap between the awareness to action. And how do you expect, how do you like it to be bridged and make it, how can we make it faster, the transition faster?
I would just first like to challenge the idea that students are aware. I think they are aware in general, but they're not sharply aware, you know? I think if you do a survey of students across the world, they will have general ideas about climate, but not very sharp, clear systems. But anyway, there are some. I think one of the things that, one of the principles of the Academy, and you could see this in operation when I visited Mumbai and with Mr. Shamathu going around the different schools at Easter, is that you only need to actually worry about a small percentage of the school. So in social change theory, there's an idea put forward by Professor Chenoweth. She's a Harvard professor of public policy. And she's identified historically that you only need 3.5% of any population to engage fully in a cause, and it has a system-wide effect. You will never catch everybody with depth. You'll never get everybody. If you get a small percentage of any community, whether it's a nation, a town, a school, or classroom, you get that 3.5, everybody else goes up, it becomes the understanding and the cause. So I think that's one of the strategies that we, and like, you did, you know, we took the principal, the teacher, and we'll have these students, these small climate academies, but they will become agents of change.
Yeah. You may want to share the name of the professor whom you just put it out in the message. Yeah. The name is clear.
Yeah. I'll type it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, great. So while reading your LinkedIn profile, I also came across this line that bridging the gap between the science of sustainability development and public awareness. So, a few thoughts on how do we bridge the gap?
Sorry, I was just typing. What I just missed the last sentence.
So, I just saw this line in your LinkedIn profile, which said that you are into bridging the gap between the science of sustainable development, yeah, and public awareness. Some, yeah, thoughts on that, please.
Yeah, that's the academy. You know, we work with the highest level experts. So we work with all the world's leading scientists. We have just recently been endorsed by the Joint Research Center of the European Commission, mm-hmm, who have extremely exacting standards for pedagogy and so on. So we take this high level science, and as a teacher, I know how things work in school. I mean, I've been a teacher for 20 odd years. I know what the difficulties are. I know. So the academy is this cog in the middle, which can, and essentially, it's in the end, it happens through this civic engagement. That's where it hits the road. So it's my job to bring all of that understanding into a textbook and into events, to speeches. So I'm the person who can give that knowledge some shape, which is digestible in bite-sized pieces. And after that, it's for schools, teachers, students, and everybody just to get going, you know? Off you go.
That's nice. So you started the Climate Academy in 2011, and in India in 2023. So what has been your big learnings from then to starting the one in India?
Yeah, it's been a really continually sharp, it's felt like a continually sharp learning curve. And most of that learning happened just with me in my spare time with students at lunches, and sometimes we went on holidays together, and just in a way messing around with it. So for 8 years, the Climate Academy was just something for my school, and it was a lunchtime club. But then in 2018-19, it was so powerful what we were doing, I thought, well, there's got to be a way to export this. It has to be replicable, because we're just a group of 12. And so that's, and in 2019, I don't know the exact date, but that's when it came up with the three pillars concept. Mm-hmm. And that's when it got, and then the rest has just been playing with that.
Yeah, anything, last words on how to get climate education moving into not just the elite schools, but also in the government schools to make it a mass movement?
Yeah, that's the ultimate goal. I think maybe Mrs. Shin Matthew has. I mean, I think in a way you have to start where the base, and I think private schools often, that they have a little bit more capacity. That's how it's true here in Europe, like that. They have that little bit of extra asset value to be able to invest. But ultimately, it will go into public schools. And I think for each country, it may work in different ways. But yeah, that's exactly the next few steps which we're looking to take together.
Looks like we are just out of time. I'd like to also share that I run a wonderful initiative called the Green Literature Festival, which is we bring the authors who write on environment from all over India to Bangalore in December, and get them to interact with students, also adults, and green business businesses in green business. So our fourth year festival is happening this year on December 7th. So this is an advance invitation to both Shim Matthew and Mr. Matthew Pai. So we'll see how we can work on the calendar. And we've got really good response cool initiative to and we hope to take this forward in a faster. And the biggest learning is that I think one of the stronger methods of moving from awareness to action is having conversations. And we are a platform of discovery where readers and students discover authors and authors discover readers. So that we have been doing a pretty good job since the last 3 years, and we hope to do it better this year and going forward. So
that's beautiful.
The advance invitation to both of you.
Thank you so
we'll
much.
Stay connected, and I'll trouble you, Matthew, by more. So do look up our website, greenlitfest.com. That is
That sounds fantastic.
Okay. Thank you for this time and for this very interesting conversation.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Namaste.